The Drew Marshall Show, reminding you that two thongs still don't make it right.
And we're back.
Wow. Stunning introduction.
I just thought I'd create an awkward moment.
It was beautiful.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're live here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. Sammy Rhodes is the author of This Is Awkward, How Life's Uncomfortable Moments Open the Door to Intimacy and Connection. Sammy Rhodes may share funny satirical bits about Christianity and other things on Twitter, but behind his 144 characters, he is limited to share with his 117,000 followers. Wow, 117,000 followers. That's a cult. Come on.
Easily.
Is deeper wisdom gained from a lifetime of feeling what Rhodes so fondly calls awkward? So he feels awkward. When was the last time you felt awkward, Tim?
Usually happens every few minutes.
It's a feeling everyone can relate to, and it's also necessary in order to break down the barriers we as humans so easily put up in order to protect ourselves. That's true, eh? Eh? That's true.
Yes. Awkwardness, we just talked about that.
We did. Awkwardness is an invitation to vulnerability, and vulnerability is where intimacy and connection are found. I want to stop there because that's a killer sentence. Awkwardness is an invitation to vulnerability, and vulnerability is where intimacy and connection are found. He joins us on the Drew Marshall Show. Sammy Rhodes, what's going on, man?
Hey, Drew. Thanks so much for having me, man. Thanks for the kind introduction.
Well, are you a nerd?
It depends on what you mean by nerd. I definitely, if you mean by nerd, obsessive about my hobbies in pretty nerdy ways, then absolutely.
What are your hobbies?
Yeah. And if you mean by hobbies, those things like food and movies. And adult beverages; those are kind of my go-tos.
All right. Well, you're not incredible. Listen, when I think of awkward, I think of nerds.
Yes.
Right. That's what they're. Sure. Yeah. They're the professional awkward people, are they not? Nerds?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, for sure. I think if you mean socially awkward, then yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think back to, you know, I know it's hard for many people to believe this, but when I used to be a nerd, I mean awkward. I would, you know, the wallflower, that phrase was invented after me. I mean, I was the dude on the wall at the dance.
Yeah, you were the sunflower wallflower because you were so tall.
So, awkwardness and intimacy, that's a weird connection for a lot of people. And I would imagine most people who are awkward shy away from anything intimate. True?
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, like, I definitely have always considered myself, I relate to what you're saying, just as an awkward person, especially socially. Definitely a true introvert, and I think, yeah, a little bit of shyness when it comes to connection or kind of putting yourself out there in some way, or maybe you find like a way to do that that doesn't involve being around people, you know. So
what? Just help me understand this. What does awkwardness have to do with intimacy and connection with others?
Yeah, so I think like the way that I define awkwardness and kind of talk about it in the book is that I think awkwardness is anytime the gap between who we think we should be or who we want to be and who we really are gets exposed. And I think that's the moment where we feel awkward is that moment where, you know, we're not being or doing or saying what we think we should be, do, or say. And so I think that does, I think what awkwardness is an invitation to, you know, connect around this idea that we all kind of long to be known. We all kind of long to be loved. And if we're being honest, all of us are awkward because all of us, you know, because none of us are who we are pretending to be or should be in any kind of perfect way. And so in that sense, even if someone is not socially awkward, they carry that kind of awkwardness around. And that's kind of what I'm driving at, that when we can begin to be okay with not being okay, you know, be okay with being awkward in that sense, I think we can begin like the real road to intimacy, which is being, you know, fully known and fully loved.
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the things I learned, especially when I was hanging out with the yoga people, was the word compare came up a lot. When you compare yourself to others, that's a launching pad into awkwardness. You know, I'm a reasonably athletic person, but when I was in my yoga classes, I felt like a complete tool because of these here were these, you know, little twinkie ladies, and I mean, I was just had my backside handed to me left, right, and center, and I felt really awkward. Well, why did I feel awkward? Because I was comparing myself to other people in the room.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Anne Lamott, her book, Bird by Bird, she talks a lot about that idea of, like, comparison being the thief of joy. And she has this great line about don't compare your insides to someone else's outsides. And so I think, like, man, when I think about what awkwardness and why it kind of keeps us from it. So yeah, I think you're exactly right, because we're constantly feeling. And that's why part of what I say, too, is, you know, that I think if you dig a little behind awkwardness, you'll find shame. And I think shame is kind of what keeps us from intimacy. You know, shame is what keeps us from really connecting with each other. And I think, so it has a lot to do with awkwardness.
I remember Ragamuffin Gospel. What was his name again? Brendan Manning. I first heard him say this, and here's a quote from him. I will not should on myself.
Mm.
What do you think about that? Is that Tim, you're looking up in the sky here. What do you think?
It's one of those things you got to think about it for a second. I would not should on myself. Whee.
Well, I think we should on ourselves a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We should have, could have, would have.
No,
right?
And that's why you need to sort of take a moment to think about it.
So is this, how does this all tie in with the Jesus stuff, man?
Yeah, I mean, so I think what you just said, I mean, I love that line from Brendan Manning. Like, I have a friend who will say, like, shooting all over ourselves, and that we do that. I mean, especially those of us, I think, who feel awkward, but I think this is all of us, right? If shame's a human being thing. And so I think if that's true, if shame's a human being thing, and we do live in the world of should, I should have, you know, from the moment I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking, like, I should have gotten up earlier. Should have gone for my run this morning, which I haven't done in months now. I should have not eaten two or three bowls of cereal for breakfast. I should have not done this, should have done that. And I think especially in the Christian world, man, you pile on spiritual disciplines on top of that, you know, on top of just functional human being shoulds, and you just have this deep recipe for shame. And I think the gospel, you know, Jesus has come, like one of my counselors loved to say, Jesus has come to unshame us. He's come to take our shame. And I think he comes, and that's the beauty of the cross to me, is like the gap between who we should be and who we are. I mean, that's Jesus comes to, you know, to take those things. I mean, we're talking about sin, right? Mm-hmm. To take those things that we have done or have left undone, and to bear our shame, and to instead invite us, and not just invite us, but give us his righteousness and his freedom and, you know, his grace. And I mean, I think that for me is what enables us to be awkward with each other and really embrace it. Is like, if we live under the Romans 8:1, no condemnation, and the freedom of the gospel, then man, we are free to be, you know, works in progress. We're free to be, just awkward people who are met with the grace of Jesus.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of trigger words here. So shame, should, compare, awkwardness, grace. I mean, even just grace. Okay, let's talk about that for a second, right? When it comes to God and us not being God, I don't know whether you realize that, Tim, or not.
I do.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
I struggle with it sometimes.
Okay.
But when it comes to God, I have a really, really hard time believing. I can cognitively grasp it, but I don't believe it when it comes to grace. Grace is actually limitless when it comes to God, because I think that God is like a parent. I create God in my own image. I know I'm not supposed to, but I do that anyway, and I think most of us do. And so I think, dude, if I was God, I would be very bugged at the fact that I have asked forgiveness, for, you know, 73 times for X, whatever it is. You know, it's like when I get in trouble doing the show here and I step across some boundaries or whatever, and the management, rightfully so, says to me, dude, you got knock it off. And I apologize because I feel horrible. But I feel like a real dope after my 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th apology. It was like, why don't you just change? Why can't I change? And when God, when you compare all that stuff to God stuff and realize that grace is limitless, I have a hard time grasping that, Sammy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, welcome to the club.
Okay.
I think I'm right with you. I mean, I think that's the hardest thing for me to believe. You know, like, well, we did a little retreat, kind of a mini retreat with some students this weekend, and I invited one of my good friends to come do this little, just speak to us a couple times. And even this morning, he's talking about, like, you know, that the promise, you know, God's promise to always love us and never give up on us is absolutely, you know, rock hard dependable. And I think even as he's saying it, I get kind of cynical. And I do think part of it for me, like part of my awkwardness is I most of the time live in that place of like self-hatred, self-condemnation, just kind of hating myself. And it's hard to believe that Jesus could see the same me that I see and like move toward me in love. And yet, like, I think that's the beauty. It's what I want to believe it. And I do believe it in my best moments, but it does seem so, like anything that we've ever experienced in this world, because none of us have ever been loved like that. Even by my wife would be the closest thing. And even, you know, like that's just totally imperfect, flawed version of that. That doesn't even come close for light a candle to it. And, so I'm with you on that.
Well, the other thing that this leads me into is, I don't know how to explain this. Let's see if I get this right. But by the way, I feel like I'm in a therapy session with you, Sammy. Thank you very much. This has been quite helpful. When I look at the root of my judgmentalism, when I get judgy about other people, I think it really comes out of the fact that I think so poorly of myself, and that if I can get something down, if I am good at something, or if someone else really isn't doing something that even I can do, then I get judgy on them. Like, man, I am such a loser that if I can do it, then you're a real loser if you can't.
Well, I heard this great definition of prejudice once, and it goes like this. Prejudice is the need to find something to hate more than you hate yourself.
Ooh, I like that. That's kind of what I was saying.
It's exactly what we're saying.
Man, we're deep here. Hey, we gotta tell a joke or something. This is getting awkward.
We need some of those adult beverages.
Okay, exactly. I think you and Sammy need to have a discussion
about
the D word, depression.
Oh yes,
Sammy, you got a little something going on.
Do you wrestle with the black dog as well?
I sure do. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I have since I guess middle school is where my first real bout that was kind of pretty devastating happened, and ever since then kind of ridden those waves, you know, seasons of just pretty crushing depression. College was probably the worst for me, and then probably honestly about 3-4 years ago, absolutely struggled with depression. Is just one of my themes, one of my songs.
Now, were you diagnosed fairly early or?
Not till college. Yeah, it was college. I think my middle school depression was pretty like circumstantially related. At least we thought. I mean, my parents had gone through a nasty divorce. My dad had gotten addicted to crack cocaine, which was like, it's hard to describe. Like he was kind of your southern white upper middle class kind of a guy that had this secret addiction that blossomed into crack cocaine. So just a lot of trauma. And I think, you know, I think everyone in my life, my mom, you know, friends, teachers, thought it was just that. And sure, certainly that was a huge trigger, you know, to say the least. But I think college was where it became clear, like, oh, this is also just maybe part of my makeup, part of my deal. And that's when I was officially employed to a psychiatrist, got diagnosed, kind of got in some medicine, and it's kind of been a, you know, an uphill, downhill, I was going to say uphill battle. I don't think it's uphill. I don't know. I mean, it feels that way. Sometimes it feels just like downhill sliding into deep darkness. But, I've kind of struggled with it ever since.
How do you climb out of it, right? How do you, especially in this whole, you know, book that we're talking about, how life's uncomfortable moments open the door to intimacy and connection. This is the name of the book, is This Is Awkward. So those are, I got to imagine, that's got to be some of your triggers for you, this depression and uncomfortable moments, and then all of a sudden you're talking about intimacy and connection. But if you're depressed, last thing you want to do is be intimate or with, you know, another human being or have connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of, you know, thinking about depression has this, it's kind of like a filter, you know, it filters how you think. And I think one of the cruelest things about depression, and I know, if you wrestle with it, you know this, is it feels impossible to believe that anyone could like you, much less love you. And so there is this kind of crushing loneliness where you're always almost like shielding off compliments or shielding off someone from trying to come near you and love you. And so in those in the hardest places, yeah, it's hard to climb out of. I mean, I would say like endure is probably, you know, more the word in my life. I'm just kind of trying to survive it. And there are some things, some practical things that can help for sure in terms of soul care, body care, you know, that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of times it's kind of enduring a season, to be honest.
All right, again, we are on the phone with Sammy Rhodes. His book is called How Life's Uncomfortable Moments Open the Door to Intimacy and Connection. The book is called This is Awkward. Speaking of awkward, we have posted a sweet little picture of Tim and I in a very awkward moment on our Facebook page, holding the book in our hands. It is an incredibly awkward thing that you want to go and click on for your chance to win a copy of this book, because we're giving away a copy of This is Awkward on our Drew Marshall Show Facebook page in partnership with HarperCollins Canada, faithbooks.ca. So go there and have a look at Tim kissing me. Oh, I told everybody.
All right.
Sammy, let's talk about this cult following you have. First of all, how do I get 117,000 followers? How do I do that?
Man, that's a long story.
Well, yeah. Start telling me now.
Yeah. So it starts with, it starts with a friend. When I joined Twitter, so a friend says, all right, get on Twitter, we'll see what it's about. I did like classic, you know, just telling about my day kind of tweets. And then I found this kind of, then I kind of did gospel type tweets, like, you know, just trying to talk about
Jesus loves you.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, good stuff. But, you know, there's going to be an abundance of it. And then I found this community. It's called Faith Star, still around. Kind of crazy. Basically, it's like an amateur people trying to be funny on Twitter kind of a website. You would pay money. This is where it gets kind of weird. You would pay money to join the site, and you'd have the ability to give and receive trophies, like for the funniest tweet of the day kind of thing. So, I mean, I got obsessed. This is where my hobbies come in. So I got really obsessed with this thing, started, you know, tweeting multiple times a day, you know, sometimes 20-plus times a day, trying to win these trophies and be funny. And eventually had a little success and started kind of building a little bit of a following. And then a few kind of real, more major comics, you know, caught wind of it. There was a piece went up in Huffington Post about it. Because I think the thing that was weird, I mean, that kind of made it unique was, oh, here, I'm a pastor, and I think it was fairly clear I was a pastor, but then all I'm trying to do is be funny. And it really was, I mean, this is Prodigal Sam days, and it really was almost, for me, this kind of caricature of myself. But it was really fun and healing for me, because it was like I was kind of discovering the beauty of humor. And humor for me, this all came, you know, this is the long version, in a point in my life where our youngest daughter was diagnosed with this condition called Dandy Walker that she's doing great now. She's about to turn 5 next week. But all they could tell us at the time was she's got this thing. Her cerebellum hasn't developed like it should, and we don't know what to tell you. It could be really, really bad, like she's going to die bad, or it could be fine. And thankfully, it's been on the fine end of the spectrum. But humor, I think, became important. It's an important part of my depression story, too. Because I think, you know, I kind of do love that idea. It's a Tolkien-Lewis kind of idea that if you listen closely enough to laughter, you can hear the echoes of hope, you know? And so I got pretty in on it. And as I kind of got in on it, people caught wind, and people like a Jim Gaffigan retweeting it, and people like a Rain Wilson retweeting it. The following just kind of honestly just took off. And then hit some accusations of plagiarism. That was a really hard season 3 years ago.
Hold on. Two things. Rain Wilson, one of my most enjoyable interviews I've ever had. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to his interview on my site, but go to drewmarshall.ca and you'll see his mug on the index page. Click on that and you can have a listen. Cool. He's a Baha'i guy, so we talked about his Baha'i faith. Secondly, what happened with the plagiarism thing? Basically, what, you tweeted something and Jerry Seinfeld said, hey, that was mine? I mean, what was it? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, so the long story short is, so part of that Fave Star community, right, there were two guys that we had kind of followed each other and, you know, promoted each other. And I think as my following got pretty, you know, started growing a bunch, these guys started kind of saying, like, hey, like, that joke comes from there, this joke comes from here, these are not your jokes, you are stealing jokes, you are rewording jokes. And then one of those guys devoted a website to it, just kind of documenting, oh, here's Sammy Sweet, here's where he got it from. And it was a really painful season. There was a part in which, looking back on it, I think part of what they were saying was fair. I mean, I do think the simplest way, I think, for me to make sense of it, because it all happened so fast. It literally was like, Christianity Today ran an article, and then literally that night, this website went up. It was like right around the same time. And it was this weird thing, because the comedy community, you know, when you're accused of plagiarism, you're done. So, like, Dane Cook, he survived it because he had a huge following. But guys like, what's his name? Carlos Mencia, who George Lopez said, hey, those are my jokes. Like, he's done. You know, like, you will never do comedy again. Mm-hmm. And so, losing that, because at this time, like, I was really thinking, this is where the story gets kind of crazy. Like, I was, like, talking to some comics and, like, thinking, should I move back, like, not do ministry and try to get into comedy? And, like, I was, like, a, you know, direct messaging back and forth with, like, a Jim Gaffigan or, like, a Neil Brennan, who was, like, Dave Chappelle's head writer, and them saying, like, you just keep doing stand-up. And so it's becoming a real thing. And the guy that devoted the website to, you know, me stealing, I think it's called Borrowing Sam, of the Tumblr page.
Oh, so hold on. So it's not DaneCook.com?
It's not DaneCook.com. That would have been amazing, though. So he basically went on a rant and said, you know, Sammy's trying to become a comic, and he, no, like, this is not, you know, well, that's not going to happen. And, man, so it was a painful season, for sure. I mean, I think looking back, the simplest thing that makes sense of it to me is I do think it's fair to say in my ministry kind of culture, it's super common for me to listen to a Tim Keller sermon and kind of take an idea or a quote and make it my own and not think twice about it. And I think in the comedy world, I've learned the hard way. You can't do that. You don't do that.
Good. Listen, we're in a copy and paste culture, man. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit. Well, I am ashamed to admit it, but I'm just telling you anyway. When I used to be a pastor, I always hesitate saying that because people fall
it's
off chairs brother. When I say that.
It's awkward. I know.
I know. It is awkward. Yes. copy and paste. I did a lot of that stuff, and I could take the most mundane material and make it absolutely effective. Originally, it didn't come from me, but I worked it so much that it was mine. But there's still a plagiaristic aspect to all that.
Sure. Yeah. And I think this is where, you know, I talked about this, I guess, 3 years ago, that salon kind of response that I did. But, I mean, I do think the tension for me is always going to be, like, you know, do not steal versus there's nothing new under the sun. And yeah. So I think, though, looking back, I mean, with three years perspective, I think, I hope a little more humility. I think, man, I just fought it. And I should have just said, you know what, like, some of what you're saying is really fair and true.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I repent. And I didn't do that. You know, I just fought it because I kind of felt like a lot of this is not true. Like a lot of it was reaching. And that's kind of where Rainn Wilson becomes part of the story. And it's like people dug through my timeline. Like they would find a bunch of quote unquote stolen stuff. But I think humility would have said, you know what? Own what you can own. Hmm. Own it hard. And then try to move on, and that's what I didn't do.
Interesting stuff. Okay, well, listen, I got so many things in my brain. I'm looking at the clock. We're running out of time here. But first of all, some of the best comedians are the most awkward human beings in the world. So I hope you get back into comedy. That was so nice.
Nice compliment there.
Thank you. Someone the other day said to me, "I lost 30 pounds," and my response quicker came out of my mouth like the. Wow, you must have been really fat. Which basically translated means, well, you're still kind of heavy now.
Yeah, nice going.
Yeah, didn't come out well. This is awkwardbook.com is the website. This is awkwardbook.com. That's the website. The gentleman's name is Sammy Rhodes, author of This Is Awkward. I like authors that are willing to be vulnerable. And look, my three words, people are tired of hearing this, but teachable, vulnerable, and authentic. Those are the three big things for me. And if you fall into, and you do, I think you fall, well, I don't know you, but from everything I've gotten in this interview,
sure.
I love that about you. So Sammy Rhodes, author of This Is Awkward, How Life's Uncomfortable Moments Open the Door to Intimacy and Connection. Again, his website is thisisawkwardbook.com. We're giving away a copy of that book on our Facebook page, the Drew Marshall Show Facebook page. Go to Facebook, find the Drew Marshall Show. You'll see a lovely, awkward picture of Tim and I. Sammy, I wish you all the best with your awkward life, and I can't wait for you to pour your soul out more into books, into your next book, and good luck with your first big launch here, man. Well done.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care. Bye, Sammy.
All right, see you guys.
Sammy Rhodes on the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, a short break, and when we come back, Soul Survivor, religious tribes competing for the soul of one person. Stay with us.
When I say stop, don't you move a bit.